Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in the listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Trinitha, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Workshop, Managing the Costs of Living with Cancer. And we know that that's a very critically important topic at this time, and we have a host of speakers, wonderful speakers, to actually address this topic, and there'll be time also for you to ask questions during the second half hour of the program. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and a number of other cancer organizations. And it's because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have on the call today over 557 participants, and you come from all over the United States, from all different regions and areas of the United States. And we also have international participants from India, Syria, and the United Kingdom. So it's really a global call, people from all over the world. And I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there is information about our speakers and the topics they'll be covered, and there also is information about all the different collaborating organizations as a resource for each of you. There also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best address and tell us actually what you would like us to cover in terms of the topics that you would like us to really address in future programs. Now, 2012 is very soon upon us, and we're planning all of our workshops for next year. And your suggestions and recommendations are very important to us, and we try very hard to offer programs that you would like us to offer. So, indeed, today's program, the topic, is one that many of you have asked us to offer, and so we're offering this program. And so you actually often determine the programs that we offer as we develop different programs. Now, today's program has been made possible by a grant from Celgene Corporation. I really want to thank them for supporting this program today. We have on the program today just wonderful speakers on the program today, and we just have some terrific speakers, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker, Dr. Charles Laprinzi. Dr. Laprinzi is the Regents Professor of Breast Cancer Research, Mayo Clinic College of Medicine. And Dr. Laprinzi is going to begin by presenting some introductory remarks, which will actually set the stage for the program today. And it's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Laprinzi.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's a pleasure to be back on this program. For those who are on the line that have heard me before, if you're getting tired, let Carolyn know. But I'm going to start off by saying that economics is not a specialty of mine in terms of my academic career. But it is kind of in my blood. My dad was Sicilian, 100% Sicilian, and he was a teacher of business and economics. And so I heard a lot about it from that perspective. I'm one of 10 children with 11 and a half years taught the bottom and no twins. So we lived kind of economically. If you don't believe me, you can talk to my wife. It drives her nuts. At any rate, the cost of medical care has increased quite a bit, and that's not a surprise to anybody who's listening to this, or not to many of you, as we hear about it politically and in many other ways. And personally, many of us have experienced that process. What I'm going to do for this introduction, the rest of the introduction section, is to share a piece of an article from it was written in the Art of Oncology section of the Journal of Clinical Oncology. And the title of it is called Spikes, that's all capitalized, S-P-I-K-E-S, and the last S is actually a dollar sign. And it's called, Spikes, a six-step protocol for delivering bad news about the cost of medical care in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, page 4200 in 2008. And Carolyn should have the reference for people who need it later on who want. And it's readily available. It's written for a medical audience, but it's written in a way that most lay people can understand most of it. So this SPIKES acronym, it was something that was taken from what another person developed this acronym for for when physicians have to break bad news or less than ideal news. And the S stands for setting the setting for the stage that for this conversation. And the P is perception, or determining what the patient's perception is of the particular issue at hand. And I is for invitation, inviting the patient to whether they'd be willing to hear this information and talk about this information. The K is for knowledge, sharing some knowledge about this process. The E is for empathy and letting the patients know and exploring and having things along that way. And the S is for strategy and summary sorts of issues. So what I'm going to do is to set this stage a bit more is to read the first three paragraphs from this article, which goes on to talk about how physicians ought to talk to patients about this issue. So here it goes. Mr. S takes you aside after his wife enters the chemotherapy room. Doctor, how much longer is this going to continue? We already sold our house, but the 20% copay on our $14,000 a month chemotherapy bills, parentheses, paclitaxel, carboplatin, trastuzumab, and pimidronate, in parentheses, are adding up quickly. I'm glad she's doing okay, but what do you do you think she'll last another 3 months, a year? I don't mean to sound morbid, but I need to plan. New paragraph. Mrs. O is a 72-year-old rural widow on a fixed income and is enrolled in Medicare without supplemental insurance. She has stopped taking her aromatase inhibitor because she reached her donut hole of $2,400 for all of her chronic medications. She's searched for the least expensive medication, but 30 tablets of letrozole cost $266. It actually doesn't, this is editorialized now, it doesn't cost that much now, but at this time it did. Now, go back to the article. Anastrozole costs $279, and exemestane costs $266. Should she go back to generic tamoxifen at $22 a month? And then the next paragraph. Ms. S is a 43-year-old single mother whose metastatic breast cancer is shrinking on sixth-line chemotherapy with 5-fluorouracil, leucovorin, and mitomycin injections 5 days in a row, monthly. She asks if you could do something else because she cannot afford the daily $35 copayment. The practice is obligated to collect this under insurance law and can't provide the treatment without charging the patient for this. So I think that sets the stage for what the rest of the speakers are going to be talking about today. How do we deal with these financial issues and learn more about it as we can get optimal cancer care, provide that for our patients, and patients can receive that for themselves? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Leprinzi, for really setting the stage for the program today. Thank you. It's very, very interesting. I'm sure there'll be questions and comments for you during the Q&A. Thank you. Our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos. Dr. Palos is Clinical Research Manager at the University of Texas, MD Anderson. Dr. Palos also is, she's with the Division of Medical Affairs, Department of Cancer Survivorship. Dr. Palos has been with MD Anderson a very long time, and she's also spoken on our programs a number of times, as has Dr. Leprinzi. And Dr. Palos is going to address the medical and indirect costs of cancer, the role of the interdisciplinary healthcare team, and emotional and social impact of the costs of treatment and follow-up care. I'm going to turn the program over to Dr. Palos.
Thank you, Carolyn, for the opportunity to be involved in the discussion of an issue that's very important. And as Dr. Leprinzi so eloquently described, the financial cost associated with cancer care is one of the major factors also that can affect the outcomes of cancer care. Regrettably, though, financial cost is often a subject that many in our society, including those of us in healthcare, are uncomfortable discussing with the patient. Many times it's because our perception is that it's inappropriate to talk about money when one's life is at stake, or the discomfort may stem from the lack of knowledge. Often providers in the clinic do not know the costs associated with the treatments, procedures, or medication. So we do know money does impact a patient's cancer experience, and the paragraphs that Dr. Leprinzi read to us really, really brought that story home when we heard the amounts that were being cited in there. The costs are high, and sometimes they become higher over the courses of one's treatment. So, yeah, the financial aspect of cancer affects us all as patients, families, and healthcare providers. In fact, on a recent survey, they showed that the highest medical cost of out-of-pocket expenses were associated with cancer care out of all the chronic diseases. And the medical cost places a significant burden on the physical, mental, as well as the financial health of the patient and the family. Well, before I go any further, it may be helpful for our listeners to become familiar with the different types of costs associated with cancer care that are gathered by the insurance companies, by the hospitals, by the federal state agencies, and even by researchers and those of us. There's no doubt in my mind that many of you deal with the medical costs on a daily basis. My goal is to help you increase your awareness so you may discuss them with your healthcare team, your insurance company, or to also start keeping record of those costs if you haven't done so already. Generally, when we think about cancer costs, we think about the costs associated with the procedures performed, the hospitalizations needed, or the medications given to us in the hospital. These are often referred to as direct medical costs. And these are the costs that I was mentioning that are usually the most simple for the insurance companies and the hospitals and for us sometimes to keep track of and get documentation of. But it doesn't mean it's always so simple to understand when we get these charges and documentation. Yet other non-medical direct costs are not so straightforward, including the out-of-pocket expenses or the costs associated with our co-payments, when counseling is required or genetic testing, when paid caregiver assistance is needed or patient prescription medications are needed. Unfortunately, these are the costs that take a significant portion of one's income. Another type of financial costs associated with cancer are called indirect costs. These are the financial costs that result from the cancer but are not applied directly to cancer care. And many of you are familiar with these. These are would include the wages lost due to reduced work hours or even the loss of employment, those associated with transportation, child care, and parking. And usually those last two groups that I spoke of are generally considered optional costs, and they're not covered by insurance. And an often forgotten cost relates to human capital. For example, what are the costs or savings related to our unpaid family, friend, caregivers? How are they impacted? Do caregivers lose their job or get reduced hours? And what is the financial impact on the caregiver's mental and physical health? Our research on caregivers shows that caregivers also are impacted financially when caring for a loved one with cancer. And if they live with the patient, they also often experience severe physical and emotional symptom burden. The burden of these financial costs will vary depending on whether a patient is not insured, underinsured, insured, or sometimes even overinsured with all the different policies people get to make sure they have enough. And I don't have time to go into detail regarding the differences among the groups, but one thing is certain. A person in any one of those categories struggles with the financial burden of cancer care, and the financial costs continue to increase. Factors contributing to the rising cost of cancer care include the increased cost of drugs, the cost of innovative technology, and even the cost of the new targeted therapies evolving from personalized medicine. Another emerging factor is the increase in cancer survivors. As cancer survivors live longer, the need to stay on medications, return for follow-up, also can contribute to the increased financial costs. So financial costs then have a significant impact on a patient's decision-making regarding their cancer treatment options. Patients sometimes may opt for a less costly treatment if they feel their families will be overburdened with debt, even ration their medication so it will last longer, or maybe choose not to return for follow-up visits or procedures. And so as the cost associated with cancer continues to increase, they often contribute to stress in the patient and their family. But financial costs are not the only factors that contribute to stress. Another factor is the lack of a social support system to assist the patient throughout their cancer experience. Studies have shown that patients with greater support and larger networks of people to help them do much better in their outcomes. So even if you're the type of person who doesn't like to discuss their financial concerns with others, this is not the time to be quiet and follow that pattern. It's important to reach out to others and increase your awareness and knowledge of the resources available to help. The resources such as cancer care, which you'll hear more about from my colleagues, your local faith-based organization, and many others that can help you if you contact them and communicate with them. Remember, you don't have to face those struggles alone. Patients, their caregivers, and families can turn to the healthcare team for support, education, and information. In many of our cancer clinics, a patient has a team of providers representing various disciplines that have a key role in delivering optimal care. So in healthcare systems, the teams often have different names. Some of them you may be familiar with. The terms such as integrated team, multidisciplinary team, and interdisciplinary team. In our discussion today, we have opted to use the term interdisciplinary team. So there are several advantages to having an interdisciplinary team. A major advantage is that the team can bridge communication among the members, provide support to you by listening to you and to your family and your caregiver. They also provide referrals to different resources, such as those available on a national, state, or local level. And you'll be hearing more about that from my colleagues in just a moment. The beauty of the interdisciplinary team is that each discipline provides their own unique skills, their knowledge, expertise, and perspective to provide optimal care for a person diagnosed with cancer, including their family. So in closing, I would just like to remind you that it's important to communicate with your providers. Don't hold back, even if initially you or your provider may feel uncomfortable discussing the financial concerns. Do not assume that the provider doesn't have time to get involved in discussing financial matters. The provider's goal is to provide optimal care, and if they know that money matters may interfere with that goal, they or an appropriate team member will sit down and discuss the financial costs with you and your families. Most important, do not feel that you are alone or that no one can help. Remember, there are resources such as Cancer Care and others that provide excellent information and resources regarding the cost of care. My colleagues, Jane and Michelle, will provide valuable information on financial resources and copayment programs, and Deborah will provide tips on understanding your health insurance and how to appeal denials. Thank you for your time, and that concludes my remarks.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Palos, just for really really covering these issues, but also highlighting the fact that we do on the call today have professionals from many different disciplines all here working together to talk about the cost of living with cancer. So that's so important, and all of you will have the chance to hear each one and their perspective and how we can all help you in different ways. So that's very important. Thank you. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. Our next speaker is Jane Levy. Jane Levy is an oncology social worker, and she is the director of the patient assistance programs at Cancer Care. And Jane's going to address how to manage the medical and indirect costs of cancer, financial programs and resources available, and linking you to needed resources. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Jane.
Hello, everyone out there. I'm Jane Levy again, Director of Patient Assistance Programs at Cancer Care. And we know at Cancer Care that this is a topic of interest for all of you. Really to underscore, maybe to repeat a little bit of what Guadalupe said, cancer is a very expensive illness and the financial concerns are pervasive, as well as a significant source of stress for patients and families. Again, can't underscore enough, having an open conversation about money and the cost of cancer can help you become better informed about your options, and you may be able to reduce the financial impact of your illness. Just briefly, again, what are some of the costs of cancer? There, again, the direct medical expenses, hospital and doctor bills, cancer drugs, other medications, medical copays. Many of these are covered by insurance, but as you all know, with those of us who have insurance, our copays keep on going up every year, and patients are absorbing more of that share of cost. Again, there are the related medical expenses. Probably the biggest one we see here at Cancer Care is really transportation, and that is getting back and forth to treatment, the cost of gas, parking, tolls, things like home care, child care if you have small children and need to leave them when you go for treatment, things like medical supplies, over-the-counter medication, food supplements, things like lodging. Many patients have to travel for their treatment, as well as just the cost of insurance itself. Put on top of that is the third layer of financial expense, and that's just really the cost of daily living. And we see with so many of our patients, especially in a stressed economy, having to deal with rent, mortgages, food, utility, and taxes. So in a brief time, I just want to maybe give you some helpful hints and some places to go. First of all, when it comes to managing medical expenses, it pays to be informed and upfront. Number one hint, understand your insurance policy so you are not blindsided by charges. And ask your insurance company to assign you a case manager. Some people aren't aware, and this can be a very, very helpful service. Many insurance companies want to make sure that you're covered for your care, and a case manager may be able to help you. It's important to keep a diary of your expenses so you can catch billing errors. They happen all the time. And as Guadalupe said, talk to your healthcare team as soon as possible about your financial situation. In 2009, ASCO, the Association of Clinical Oncology, put out a terrific publication on the cost of cancer and about how maybe you can speak to your oncologist and the oncology team about your financial concerns. The very fact that they put out this pamphlet sort of underscored and validated that the cat's out of the bag, and it's really okay to talk to your healthcare team. For all of you that are interested, if you go to Cancer Care's website, www.cancercare.org, under our financial assistance heading, you can find a copy of that ASCO guide called Managing the Cost of Cancer. Again, physicians and healthcare providers are more sensitive and can connect you to people who know about such resources. And who are these people? Well, many of us are social workers, discharge planning nurses, financial coordinators, as well as resource specialists. And every year, cancer centers and even individual doctor offices are adding this type of helpful personnel. And these are the people that you can turn to direct you to organizations and entitlement programs, such things such as copay assistance, and Michelle will talk more. Pharmaceutical support. Even for patients with assistance, many of the pharmaceutical companies are providing help and guidance in obtaining certain types of medications, as well as they do have reimbursement specialists. Very often, people do not get the type of reimbursement because maybe their doctor's office or whatever is not using the right code. So many of the companies have reimbursement specialists. They can also help you with things such as applications to places like Leukemia Lymphoma Society, Cancer Care, the American Cancer Society, for things like transportation assistance. They may also be able to advise you on health insurance options. As many of you know, as part of affordable health care, there are new health insurance options for people with pre-existing conditions. The most important thing really is not to delay, because when it comes to applying to benefits, it takes time to process these things. And also, if medical bills threaten to overwhelm you, all the experts recommend that you speak up immediately, because many settings may offer you a payment plan. They may indeed be willing to cut the charges, or they may indeed have some type of special funding. By all means, all the experts say do not ignore bills, for once they go into collection, they are much harder to resolve. I know this sounds like a tall order when you were sick, but there are both private and nonprofit organizations that can help you negotiate your medical bills. One organization, the Patient Advocate Foundation, may be able to assign you an advocate to talk with your hospital and to help negotiate your hospital or insurance bill. There are also organizations where you can maybe hire a medical billing specialist. There are resources to help you pay for cancer medications, and aside again from copay industry, the pharmaceutical industry sometimes provides free product for uninsured patients, as well as special discount cards for patients who may be underinsured. And when it comes to expenses of daily living, it's also important to let your creditors know about your financial situation. You may be surprised about getting a positive response from maybe your phone or your utility company. Even landlords may be able to work with you before a crisis develops. There are many voluntary and government organizations, both local, state and county. This varies from location to location, so I know we're speaking to people from all over the country, but many locales do have emergency assistance, eviction protection programs, rent assistance, food programs, and property tax relief. well, again, how do you find these programs? From some of the professional personnel that I've mentioned, hospital social workers, resource specialists, discharge planners. But also, I believe in your packets, many of you got a listing of financial selected financial resources. So if you look at that, you'll see the names and websites of many organizations. Just to highlight a few, one of them is called CFAC. It's a website. It's listed on our cancer care website, and it's a list of financial resources for cancer patients that is searchable by both disease type and zip code. The American Cancer Society maintains an extensive resource database, also searchable by zip code. The Patient Advocate Foundation has a state-by-state financial resource database. And I'd like to mention your area agency of aging, if you're over the age of 60, has an elder care locator through zip code. And there are many case management agencies and services that may know about benefits in your area. Lastly, the United Way 211 referral number is really a good way to hook into voluntary organizations in your community. And again, they would have a listing of nonprofit organizations, such like Catholic Charities, that often offer assistance in case management. There are faith-based organizations, et cetera. Just yesterday, in fact, we got a request from a woman in Clearwater, Florida. She needed help with her utility bill. That was not something Cancer Care could help with, although we were able to help her with her transportation expense. But by searching her United Way database, I actually was able to come up with a local organization that had one-time utility assistance. Again, related expenses such as transportation, lodging, and equipment, organizations like Cancer Care, divisions of the American Cancer Society, Leukemia, Lymphoma, and local cancer organizations may be able to help. While I'm wrapping up, I know I'm talking quickly, I'd like everybody to jot down what I think is a fabulous website. It's entitled Survivorship, all one word, A-to-Z.org. It's an excellent resource for planning for cancer and other chronic diseases on all aspects of financial planning that are really too detailed to discuss here, but I really direct everyone to that website. In conclusion, there are resources out there that may address many aspects of your financial concern. So everyone, get informed, speak up, get organized, and don't be afraid to ask for help. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Jane. And I think these are wonderful tips for everybody. And actually, that survivorship, A-Z, is it, .org, sounds like a wonderful resource. And please, during the Q&A, we'll ask more questions. Also, I think Jane's making an excellent point that it's always good to have someone working with you on these things, that you have a social worker, a nurse, your physician, someone from COPAY or a lawyer working with you to try to get the best resources and help for you. Clearly there is help out there, but it takes a village often to get all that help, and we're trying to kind of let you all know that there are things that we can help with, and putting us all together will get you often what you need. So thank you very much, Jane, and wonderful resource information. Our next speaker is Michelle McCourt. Michelle is Director, Cancer Care Copayment Assistance Foundation. And Michelle is going to address really a whole understanding your health, actually how to access copayment assistance programs. Michelle?
Thank you, Carolyn. Good afternoon, everyone. My topic today is to discuss accessing financial and copayment assistance programs. As director of Cancer Care's Copayment Foundation, I hear frequently from patients that they didn't know about these programs and wish they knew about them sooner. The stress of trying to figure out how they will afford their medications is very wearing on a patient, something that they shouldn't have to worry about in addition to trying to manage the disease itself. All too often, once a patient finds out the cost of treatment, they opt out and decide that they don't want to put their family through the expense and create a financial hardship. Others will try to stretch the medication and turn a 30-day supply into a 60-day supply, rendering the treatment ineffective and making the patient noncompliant, a big issue for oncology patients. So what is a patient to do? How can they find out about these programs, and how can they get help? The first step is to know your insurance coverage and the limitations of your coverage. This includes your prescription coverage. Is there a cap on your coverage? Do you have a copay? Do you have a deductible? Is the medication that your oncologist prescribed covered, and how is it covered? It may be covered in a different tier or level of coverage, which changes the prescription copay amount that you are used to paying. For example, maybe you have a $10 copay for generic prescriptions and a $25 copay for brand, but for specialty medications, you have to pay a percentage of the cost. Most of the oral targeted treatments for cancer are classified as specialty medications. To find out about your coverage, you should contact your insurance provider directly and ask if the medication is covered and what your out-of-pocket cost will be. Another way to find out about coverage is to discuss this issue with your oncologist office or your pharmacist. There may be a financial counselor on your or oncology social worker on staff that can assist you with this process. With oncology medications, there is usually a toll-free number that you can call or a website that will provide reimbursement support. The customer service representative will contact your insurance provider to get a summary of your benefits. They will process any prior authorization if one is required and can even assist with the appeals process if your insurance denies coverage. Once they have determined your out-of-pocket costs, they can refer you to organizations to apply for assistance. They can also let you know about coupons or discount cards to lower your costs or provide interim assistance while you apply to a copayment foundation. If you have no insurance, they can refer you to patient assistance programs that provide the drug free to eligible patients. Patients who have Medicare as their primary insurance and have limited income but aren't eligible for full state Medicaid assistance often don't realize that there are other types of coverage that might be available to them through Medicare savings programs. You can get help from your state to pay for your Medicare premiums and in some cases to pay for the Medicare deductibles, coinsurance, and copayments if you meet certain conditions. There are four types of Medicare savings programs: qualified Medicare beneficiary, QMB program, specified low-income Medicare beneficiary, or SLMB program, qualified individual, or QI program, and qualified disabled and working individuals, or QDWI program. If you have a prescription drug coverage through Medicare prescription drug plan or a Part D plan, you may be eligible for extra help low-income subsidy. If eligible, this assistance would greatly reduce your out-of-pocket costs for prescriptions. There are also state pharmaceutical programs and programs for the elderly. To find out more information about these programs and to apply for assistance, you can go online to Medicare.gov or you can call Social Security at 1-800-772-1213. Once you've been referred to an organization to apply for assistance, get in touch with them right away to start the application process. There are approximately 8 national copayment assistance foundations. These foundations are administered by independent, not-for-profit organizations. Some provide assistance with copayments and coinsurance for prescription medications, while others also offer assistance with insurance premiums. Each foundation has its own criteria and process, but for the most part, all foundations have established financial eligibility criteria that needs to be documented as part of the application process. If approved, most foundations will establish a third-party payer relationship with the pharmacy or infusion provider to arrange for direct billing for easier access for the patient. And most award assistance for 1 year, and then the patient can reapply. A couple of things to keep in mind when applying for copayment assistance. All of the programs are disease-specific. You have to have the specific diagnosis that the foundation has funding for. You have to meet the financial criteria established by the foundation and submit proof of income in order to be eligible. All applications are processed in the order that they are received to the extent that funding is available. Funding is limited, and there will be funding shortfalls. In summary, ways to find out about copayment assistance programs include internet searches. Most medications have their own website with links for reimbursement resources. Your doctor's office. Make an appointment to meet the financial counselor or social worker on staff who can help you find resources for financial assistance. Advocacy groups such as Cancer Care or the American Cancer Society are great resources for finding out about programs. Jane Levy mentioned the CFAC website, cancerfac.org, which is a website that provides resources that specifically offer financial assistance for cancer-related costs. A newly developed website, patientassistancelink.org, is a website portal that was developed with the collaboration of a few of the foundations that provide copayment assistance. This website was designed to assist the patient or the caregiver by providing a website that will keep up-to-date information on all the programs that have funding. You go to this portal, plug in your specific information, the type of funding you are looking for, and if a program exists, the system will return results of the various programs that are available. Once you choose a program, the system will send your information directly to the foundation. The foundation will then get in touch with you about the next steps. The portal website, again, is www.patientassistancelink.org. Thank you. This concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much, Michelle. It was really very informative, and really the portal is just such a wonderful resource, and just understanding all about copayment assistance is so important for everybody on the call today. Thank you. Our next speaker is Deborah Wolf, and Deborah is an attorney. She's senior attorney, Legal Health, New York Legal Assistance Group, or NILAG, and Deborah is going to address understanding your health coverage, as well as what to do when your claims are denied, the appeals process, and tips on appealing medical insurance claims and provider denials. It's my pleasure to bring on Deborah Wolf. Deborah?
Thank you, Carolyn. I'm happy to be a part of this presentation, and as Carolyn mentioned, I'll be discussing understanding your health coverage and what to do when your insurance claims are denied, and I'll talk a little bit about the appeals process as well. As an attorney, my practice is limited to assisting people with cancer and their families, and insurance issues are a large part of my practice, and I know that the issues can be very complex and complicated, so I'll try and simplify it as much as I can. As a start, it's important to know that there are many different types of insurance policies. For example, there's group policies from employment, union benefits, and privately purchased insurance policies. And I'm also going to talk briefly about Medicaid and Medicare. And the rules vary depending on the type of policy or plan that a person has. Also, state laws may apply. So your insurance rights may vary also depending on where you live. So this is going to be very general advice that will relate to all. And I first want to take a minute to talk about some of the steps you can take to avoid claim denials. The first and one of the most important is to make sure that you have and read a copy of your policy or a summary description of your policy. And this will outline your benefits, the appeals process, and any coverage limits that your policy may have. With the new health care law, there's no more monetary caps on benefits, but there may be other limitations in your policies, and these are things that we all need to know beforehand. Second, if your policy requires pre-authorization, and most do for major medical procedures and radiology, such as PET scans and MRIs, make sure that either you start the process for pre-authorization, or if you are relying on your doctor's office, that your doctor's office follows through. You have to ask to make sure that the procedure is approved. If you're having surgery, make sure that all the physicians that are involved, including the anesthesiologist, are all in your insurance network. And again, you have to ask. I've had a number of cases where a doctor is called in to participate and may not be in the patient's insurance network, and that patient is then billed for thousands of dollars for that doctor's services. Your insurance company is required to provide an explanation of benefit for each claim they review. The explanation of benefit, or it's often called an EOB, outlines the amount paid, your required contribution, which can be your copay or your percentage, and if the insurance is not paying, the reasons for the denial. And sometimes insurance companies will also issue a more complete denial letter. whether it's an explanation of benefit or a letter, make sure you read it carefully and be sure to understand why your coverage was denied. And if there's any part of the reason for the denial or the appeals process that you don't understand, make a phone call and ask your insurance representative to explain it to you, because often they're very willing to help you understand your policy and the appeal process. And also make sure that you keep track of every call or letter, writing down the date, and specifically whom you spoke to. And when a claim is denied, your first step should be to call the insurance company right away to discuss. And remember that denials are not always correct. Sometimes claims are denied for administrative reasons that are easy to fix. For example, the office wrote down the wrong code or the incorrect policy number, but sometimes other mistakes can be made, so it's important to discuss this with your insurance company. If this is not the case, you will need to file a written appeal directly to the insurance company denying the claim, and this is called an administrative appeal. With most policies, this is required before anyone files a lawsuit, and if you try to go to court without first appealing to the insurance company, the court claim would have to be dismissed. Most states also have managed care bill of rights, which address grievance procedures, so check with your state insurance department website to also understand all of your rights as well as your insurance company's responsibilities under your state law. With most policies, you have the right to request a full copy of your insurance file prior to sending in your appeal because you want to see how they reached their decision to deny your claim. This would include any notes that are made by the case handler, any reports by the insurance company doctor who reviewed your case. For example, you want to make sure that the insurance doctor who reviewed your claim is a specialist in oncology and not another medical field such as cardiology or pediatrics, and this does happen from time to time. And I always recommend that you try and get a copy of your claim file, except in cases that have time concerns. In your appeal, you want to document the reason that you disagree with the insurance company's determination. You should include medical exhibits and always try to include a letter from your treating doctor. I often ask the treating doctor to review the denial letter and respond in writing. And if your appeal is denied, follow this process until you've exhausted any appeals that are offered to you. There may be two and sometimes three levels of appeal to the insurance company, and use them and submit as much information as possible. It's also, again, important to check with your state insurance department and find out if you have access to an external independent review and how that can be initiated. Many states, including New York, where I practice, offer external reviews by the insurance department. And the benefit is that the person that's looking at your claim is neutral and objective and doesn't work for the insurance company. And in New York, well over 50% of insurance denials are overturned at the external review level. And this review can be expedited in cases of medical necessity. Generally, there's four main reasons for denials. One is medical necessity, when generally the insurance company is asking or they need for more medical documentation, lack of pre-authorization, experimental or out of network, and again, it's important to make sure that you understand what your policy offers regarding out of network coverage, and if you're in an HMO that allows only in network, to make sure that all of your doctors are in your network. I want to mention that with denials for failure to obtain pre-authorization, again, call your insurance company and ask what they need to approve the claim, because in my experience, I found that they often will work with you to get whatever it is they need to give you retroactive recertification of your claim. And finally, it's very important to make sure that you understand your time limits to the appeal, that these are very strict deadlines. If this is a policy from work, then your deadline is generally 180 days. But for other policies, the insurance contract will let you know exactly how much time you have to appeal, and generally the insurance company will tell you that in any denial they give you. But remember that an insurance policy is a contract, meaning you must adhere to the rules laid out. The good news is that around half of all denied claims that are appealed to the top are finally allowed coverage, and the percentage for external reviews to a state insurance department is even higher. And if you draw on all the resources available to you and have adequate medical support for your claim, you stand a good chance of having your claim paid. I want to talk for a minute about Medicaid and Medicare, which are governed by federal or state law. But both, with both, again, a person is entitled to an appeal or a fair hearing if the claim is denied. And when there is a denial sent, you will also receive notice about how to appeal. And the same rules apply as with private insurance. Make sure you understand the reason for the denial and present your arguments clearly. For Medicare, Parts A, B, and D have different procedures for appealing. And it's also different depending on whether you're in straight Medicare or in a Medicare Advantage plan. So make sure that you read your denial carefully, and it will instruct you how to appeal. And the same is true with Medicaid. So you need to understand the process and any time limits. But when appealed, again, even a higher percentage of these cases are reversed on appeal. So if you put the time and the effort into understanding why the claim was denied and what you need to have it approved, chances are you'll be successful with your appeal. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, Deborah. That is really an astounding piece of information for everybody to hear, that indeed when one appeals, there's a very good chance that one may actually win, and that's so important. That's overturned the denial. That's so important. Well, I want to thank our speakers. Now we have time now for questions, actually, and I'm going to ask Chanitha to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions, and then we'll try to answer as many of your questions as possible. Chanitha?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Our first question is from Sherry R. Your question, please.
Yes. Michelle, I missed your website on that patient assistance link. Can you repeat that, please?
Sure. It's patientassistancelink.org, O-R-G. Thank you. That's and I hope that helps, Sheila. That actually someone else had asked about that online as well. It's an online question. So it's patientassistancelink.org.
Correct.
So excellent. Okay. Thank you. Our next question.
Thank you. Our next question is from Robert W. Your question, please.
Yes. You've given quite a bit of information, excellent information, about resources for cancer patients, but 25% of the cancer patients who survive will have lymphedema, and I see that none of the websites really deal with what a patient, how the patient can get help with their lymphedema supplies, their bandaging supplies, their garments, and their physical therapy sessions. Is there any information that you can give us on that subject?
Robert, that's an excellent question. Jane, can you address that question?
Yes, that is an area of concern. Some of the breast cancer organizations, individual local breast cancer organizations, do provide some financial help for lymphedema. I don't know of any other organization offhand, except that maybe the National Lymphedema Foundation may have, some referrals, but you're right, I don't know of any organization. You may want to look and see if it's covered under any insurance. But you're right, there is there are concerns regarding, you're right, it's therapy, it's the bandaging, it's the garments. Maybe the lymphedema specialist may also be able to give you some advice.
Excellent. And Lupe, did you want to, Dr. Papalos, do you want to comment on that as well?
Well, I agree with what Jane was just saying, that it goes back again that these are some of those medical costs that that many of the insurance companies consider optional. So it's very hard to find insurances that will cover some of these. So the best thing is to just go ahead and go through word of mouth and the grassroots communication, because that's where I think you can really find a lot of resources that people don't usually see them posted on brochures and things like that. The other thing I would do is definitely speak to your providers, because they also might know of some special organizations that work with this area, or they may be able to, you know, find creative ways to be able to say, okay, maybe this time we can do it this way, and then in the meantime we'll be looking for other sources for you. And the reason I say that is I had an example in the clinic one time where I had a patient that had two prescriptions. She had to pay a $15 copay for each one of the prescriptions, and she only had $20. And so she was asking me, one was for her pain and one was a targeted therapy for her breast cancer. And she said, okay, so which one do I fill? I only have $20 with me. So the thing that we did, I took her to the clinic nurse. The clinic nurse spoke to the oncologist. The oncologist spoke to the social worker. The social worker then spoke to the financial counselor. And then a lot of different process and procedures, but by the end of the day, she was able to get some adjustments made. We were able to find some ways in the future that she was going to be able to help with some of those copays. So I think it's really reaching out and talking to people and asking for help. And so it goes back again to what was said earlier by one of our speakers. It takes a team, and it takes a village to try to address these. So there's not a concrete answer I can give you, sir, but I think that those are the kinds of things that you can do from a self-advocacy perspective.
Excellent. And, you know, also there definitely working with your healthcare team is just so important. And but I think, Robert, you raise a very important question in terms of sometimes there are more complicated things to get covered, and I would definitely utilize some of the resources that we've provided for you. And I think, as Lupe said, sometimes that grassroots calling one and then the other and working with your healthcare team particularly around this, it's very important. So thank you for that question. Excellent. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Catherine V. Your question, please.
Yes. Michelle mentioned a website, and she referred to it from someone else, too, and I didn't get the name. It sounded like cancerfrack.org.
It's cancer. Yes, cancerfrack. It's cancerfac.org. It stands for Cancer Financial Assistance Coalition.
And actually, that information also should be in your materials as well. It's an excellent question in terms of just wanting to get all that information correctly, and so these are good questions. And I also wanted to mention, you know, one of our online registrants, actually, a comment. We had a program yesterday on adherence, and one of the organizations that partnered on that program is the Patient Access Network Foundation. And they actually might also be a resource for sometimes these more complicated situations as well. And their website is www.panfoundation.org. So that's another resource to think about as well for some of these complicated issues that you might need some help with. Our next question.
Thank you. Our next question is from Laura C. Your question, please.
Yes. Hi. I'm a stage 4 colon cancer patient collecting Social Security disability just recently, and it is just not enough money to pay my bills. While thankfully I have my medical bills covered, is there any suggestions in how to find a way to supplement my income so that I can afford to continue to live?
Excellent question. I'm going to ask a couple of our speakers to weigh in. I'm going to ask Jane and Dr. Papalos to weigh in on that. Jane, do you want to go first?
You know, the only thing that I could think of, again, there are, you know, it's always helpful for people to try, if it's physically possible, many cancer patients do, they are allowed by law, even to receive disability. I don't know if they are allowed to do any part-time work or not. I would discuss that with Social Security. It may not be possible. You may want to look to local, state, and county organizations to see if there are programs that would help lower some of your expenses. So while that may not be gaining income, it may help you to stretch the income that you have, because this is a real problem. So I'm talking about things like many state and local governments have heating assistance for during the winter, or talking to your utility or phone company on being on some type of plan. Patients with disabilities are sometimes eligible for, property tax relief. So those types of things may be of assistance to you. There are organizations that help, provide meal programs for cancer patients that aren't necessarily income-based. So those are things that you may want to look into to help lower some of your expenses, as well as organizations that, provide help with things like, transportation, et cetera, so that's not an out-of-pocket expense for you.
That's excellent, Jane. Those are great. And I'm suddenly talking, but Deborah, could you comment on Social Security disability and ability to work? Even if it doesn't apply to this caller, it might apply to other people on the call as well.
Absolutely. And, if the patient and the doctor agree that you're able to work, let's say, part-time, Social Security disability does allow a person to work and earn a certain amount of income as long as it's under what they call the SGA amount, which right now, don't quote me on the exact amount, but it's about $1,000. So as long as somebody is doing less than what they call substantial gainful activity, a person can work and it won't affect their Social Security disability benefits. And Social Security also has a 9-month trial work period where somebody who's collecting disability might want to try and work and even earn above the substantial gainful activity limit. And they're allowed to do that for 9 months and collect whatever earnings they may be entitled to, and their full Social Security benefit. And if somebody works for, let's say, 3 months and then says, this is very difficult and I need to take a break, their disability benefits aren't affected. They'll continue to receive their disability. It's only true with Social Security disability, not anybody that's collecting SSI, but it definitely does allow somebody to earn a little bit of extra income.
Excellent. That's very helpful. And you can see how it takes a team of different disciplines to answer that question. I'm going to ask Dr. Palos to comment as well.
Mm-hmm. I think Jane and Deborah gave some very good responses. But I think in listening to these questions, what really hits home with me is that these are very complicated questions that have no easy answers to them. One of the things I would strongly recommend, though, to any of our listeners is to be sure and go out and ask the questions. For example, right now on the question about going to work, it's going to be very important to find out what are the guidelines, what are the policies, what are the restrictions that are related to the current assistance programs that you may be on already, because you certainly don't want to jeopardize what you already have. So it's good to get as much information as you can and ask those questions. Keep some documentation of a notebook with all your documentation of information and the responses that you get, and, of course, all the people that you speak to. I think that's very important. And then the other thing is, we have listeners from all across the nation and different parts of the world. So these policies and guidelines and programs are going to differ in all the different locations. So I can't say enough that it's very important that you know what's at your local level. And I think Jane gave some good examples. There was the United Way. There are some programs, services out there that will be able to give information on a widespread level of what's available in your community. And so it would help to get familiar with who those resources are in your community. Because one of the things that I was just thinking of is, we talk and we laugh about social media, like the Twitter and the YouTube and all of that, but I can't say enough how if someone puts a call out there for help, you would not believe the response that people will give to you. So that's, you know, you, you you can be creative and think out of the usual box of just going to an agency all the time, but talk to your local community and use some of these social media networks that are out there also. Those are very important because there is no easy answer to any of these questions.
Well, thank you so much. I want to thank all of our speakers. This has been an extraordinary call. And I think, as Dr. Pavlos has said, these are very complicated issues. We want you to know that although the call is about to end, that we want you to know that you have access to the staff at Cancer Care, all of our social work staff, our oncology social workers, to address any questions or concerns that you have that you didn't get a chance to ask on today's program. Most importantly, we do not want anyone to leave this call thinking that you're alone in trying to struggle or find solve a problem. We have a staff of 40 master's level trained oncology social workers who are here to provide practical and financial assistance and counseling services, and really we have workshops and all kinds of educational materials, so do call us at 1-800-813-HOPE. I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.